Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, of course, the plane shift packet to my Art of Magic book, Mr. Robert Lundgren. How you doing?
Hello. Doing good.
How's life treating you out there in the Portland?
It's good.
You know what I had last night?
What?
A little piece of Portland.
Is that a euphemism for something?
No. You know how Voodoo Donuts is a Portland brand?
In the sense that I know it exists out here, and people complain that there's too many tourists, so I haven't gone yet.
Well, Voodoo Donuts opened up a shop out here in Austin, and last night I went there with Flip Flory, flipped the table because he was in town, and we had ridiculous amounts of donuts. No joke, he bought a dozen donuts and took them home with him.
Wow, they're that good?
Yes, they're that good. There was one donut that was coated in Fruit Loops. I had one maple, and I swear to you, it was a quarter inch thick of maple covering on it. And embedded in the maple were some of the best cooked bacon bits I'd ever had.
All right, have you been to Gordeaux's?
Like, yes.
This is so not fun for anybody who's not from Austin. I apologize, but okay.
I've been to Gordeaux's, and it's good.
Compare it to Gordeaux's.
They're on the same level, but they're different flavors.
Okay.
If you like donuts, Austin's a good place to visit. I'm just going to say that.
Well, I will give Voodoo a go, I guess. I'll put it on the list.
Well, as always, let's go ahead and get this episode started with a wonderful thank you to all of our fantastic patrons over at Patreon. You guys help us keep the lights going, help us keep the show going, and we truly, truly appreciate your efforts.
I don't know what we'd be without you guys. There'd be a hole right here. Do you see it, Jonathan? Not that we have video chat open. Do you see it? It's in my heart. That's where it'd be. Right there.
Aww.
So, it's episode 34, Jonathan. What does that mean?
Well, sadly, that means that the contest is over, Robert.
Yep. Hope you entered. Hope you entered twice for a copy of Space Freaks.
And when are we announcing the winner, Robert?
Next episode in 35.
Fantastic. That is, of course, for a copy of Space Freaks from our friends over at Stronghold Games. If you want to learn all about Space Freaks, what episode can they tune into?
That would be episode 28, titled Dunk the Ring. We have an interview with the president of Stronghold Games, Mr. Stephen Bonacore. And yeah, go back and listen to that. He talks a lot about it, and there you go.
Yeah, that game looks awesome. I'm really excited about that.
Well, you can't enter.
You're
going to have to buy it like the sad, normal people who aren't going to win a cool contest.
Yeah, but I'm totally okay with that, because the game looks cool. All right, well, without any further ado, let's get to our off-the-shelf segment. This is, of course, the segment where we talk about all the cool, geeky media-related stuff that we've had off the shelf, including, oddly enough, board games. But before we get there, let's go ahead and start with, I don't know, Robert, let's talk about TV this time. Let's go TV first.
All right. So I finally watched Bright.
It's so bad, it's good.
No, dude, that movie, I don't think it's intentionally genius, but I think it might be genius. Unintentional genius. And I feel like I could talk an entire segment about that movie, because it's kind of amazing.
Maybe we should do that as a minisode.
There you go, for the Patreons. I don't know, man. But yeah, that okay. So here's one of the criticisms I see of it, and this is like one of the things I'd love to dive into. So there's a lot of criticism about that movie about how it portrays race, and you know, the whole, you know, thing that the orcs are basically depicted as, you know, air quotes, African Americans or something like that. Because, you know, they're into football, I guess. I'm not sure what... there's videos and essays and everything you can read about it. And everybody's like, it starts talking about race, but then it doesn't say anything. What's the deal? I don't understand. And it dawned on me as I was talking with my buddy after we watched the movie, or it dawned on the both of us, because this is a conversation we had, that it's not saying anything about race. You know what it's doing? It's doing stupid fantasy tropes where they just, like, insert a culture here as a non-human race and like use it as an easy method of, you know, just giving them, you know, characteristics. And fantasy has been doing that for years. Like, go look at, I don't know, World of Warcraft, where there's a lot of, like, the Night Elves have a lot of Korean stuff, and the Trolls have a lot of, you know, Caribbean stuff mixed in with their lore. And, or not Caribbean, I'm sorry, voodoo stuff mixed in with their lore. And it's just them doing that. And yeah. And it's like, and people are like, I don't
think
get
people
what
were looking
say.
For more than that movie ever intended to provide.
But
and I don't know why.
That's the point, though. That's the beauty of it. You shouldn't have a conversation about did they fail at their race relations or whatever. That's not the point. The point is, that's a thing that just fantasy does all the time. And maybe we should be talking about that. But the problem is, a lot of people who review it and saw it, like, don't play D&D and haven't had their heads up the butts of the fantasy genre for, like, my entire life. So they haven't, like, thought about these things. And I'll point out something else. One last thing. If you read the reviews, there's this definite line. And anybody who's under a certain age liked the movie. And anybody who's older than a certain age didn't like the movie. And I'm not sure what the age cutoff is, but it really has to do with how old were you when the Lord of the Rings movies came out. And did you see them? And were they, like, a big part of your childhood persona or whatever? And did you play a lot of D&D? Like, you know, when D&D got big in the 80s, you know, because that seems to be the cutoff. If you're a fan of D&D, and then when, you know, nerd culture exploded in the mainstream, were you raised on it then? Those people, like me, like you, we liked Bright because it was especially riffing off of 90s culture.
No. In fact, I'm so glad you said that, because that's exactly what I felt like I was watching. I felt like I was watching a 90s LA movie about, you know, dealing with gangs.
Yeah, it was so. And incidentally,
it felt like a John Singleton movie.
The guy
for the
who wrote
first
it wrote
half
Training
of it.
Day. Did you know that he wrote Training Day?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think that movie intentionally was genius, but I think it might be. And like you go into this whole weird, we could go down the rabbit hole of race and what it was saying and like fantasy and blah, like it just opens these doors, man. I don't know, like I said, I could talk about that movie all day.
We should
awesome.
Definitely do this as a topic for the mini cast. In fact, you know it might be worth a second watch, I gotta tell you.
Okay.
I did not mind that movie.
Yeah, no, I'll watch it again so we can talk way too deeply. I'm warning you, everybody. Robert has a degree in sociology. I got my BA in sociology. Robert can talk about this. So, yeah.
Well, let's shelve Bright for now. We'll come back to that in a different form. But I see in the notes here that you had the worst hour of TV that you've had to sit through this season.
Oh, my. Okay. Are you up on Flash at all?
No, I'm so behind. I haven't watched it at all this season.
Okay, I'll try to not do a spoiler. Basically, Barry this season got framed for a murder. And he doesn't want to say that he couldn't have done it because he's the Flash. You know, he doesn't want to give up his secret identity or whatever. And so he gets arrested and, you know, gets thrown in prison. And there's an episode where they do from A to Z, his arrest and his trial and him getting thrown into jail after sentencing all in one episode. And it was the worst episode. It was the worst hour of TV I've sat through because it was so contrived, and it was like the person who wrote it had obviously only watched Law and Order when it was on in the background while they were like painting miniatures or just doing something else, you know. And it was like really bad courtroom drama. It was terrible. And we were almost trying to say we were trying to rescue it because it's like, oh, it's like channeling the Silver Age when, you know, people would do silly courtroom stuff, like, you know, back in the 50s or whatever. But and here's the thing. It's obvious they wanted to put Barry in prison, like, because after he got to prison, there's been interesting episodes. But it was like they allotted themselves one episode for him to get arrested, tried, and sentenced. One episode.
Was the sound ever made? Dun dun.
No. But I mean, and it was just it. They obviously filmed probably like 2 hours worth of stuff, but because they had to cut it down, Barry's lawyer looked like an idiot, and it was one of the main characters because she never objected. She never did anything. You know, when the prosecutor was obviously doing stuff that would reasonably raise an objection, she just sat there. It's like, this is looking really bad for you, Barry. It's like, no, it's not. Like, object.
Man, you're kind of screwed. You want to say something about that? Nah, I'm good.
Nah. We're good. So, it was just terrible. And they treat like the evidence they had on Barry was a slam dunk, and it totally wasn't. It, like, totally wasn't a slam dunk. And, yeah,
Good shows go bad.
Yeah. Oh,
we could do an entire another segment on that.
But mind you, the episode after that got way better because he's just in prison now and they're doing Barry in prison stuff and that's okay. But it was just getting him there. It was like, guys, it's not that short amount of time. Like that trial and that amount of time would have been months. You know.
All right. What else have you been watching?
So I watched Black Lightning.
I haven't watched it yet. I really want to.
You should watch it. You should watch it.
Is it good?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're continuing the streak?
Yeah. Yeah. It's think of it. It's kind of at maybe not the halfway point, but it's definitely a mix of the standard CW superheroic fare with Luke Cage. Like they obviously were really channeling Luke Cage. And so, you know, like a lot of the stuff that comes up in Luke Cage comes up in that show. It's just a little bit more heroic and slightly toned down because it's on network TV.
I'm okay with that, though. I'm okay with them trying to get to the Luke Cage level because I loved Luke Cage. I thought Luke Cage was brilliant.
Yeah, no, and this show's interesting because it's a little bit of a departure because Black Lightning, they're going with his sort of current incarnation in the comics. So he's a dad, and not only that, his kids are like 19 and 16 or something like that. It's like kids are old. One of them's out of the house already. And because of that, like, you know, he was Black Lightning for a while, and then he gave it up to try to save his marriage, and then his marriage fell apart anyway. And he still gave it up. So like Black Lightning was gone for a while. And then it's kind of showing like why Black Lightning came back. And it's got a pretty decent rap soundtrack. And it's doing a lot of things that Luke Cage did, but it's doing them in kind of that CW way. But it, not so much because, you know, they don't have a cast full of 20 somethings because,
well,
you know,
I'm putting it on the list then because it sounds right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. And it's the first one I've seen where they just handle like, because sometimes they treat the superheroics like, you know, the superhero wouldn't kill anybody even unintentionally. And Black Lightning doesn't care. He kills a few people. He doesn't even he doesn't even mind. You know,
they did that with the first episode or the first season of Arrow, too. He had a body count, man.
Yeah, no. And he like held a guy up in front of him as a shield and he did a whole bunch of stuff. And I wish, here's the thing. They've been kind of wishy-washy of if it's in the Arrowverse or not. And I want it to be because Black Lightning definitely takes that tone that, you know, the police are not necessarily your friends. And I would love Joe West from Flash and him to get in a conversation.
Oh, that would be good.
I think that would be good TV because they're, you know, they're both black men and they both have a different relationship with law enforcement. And I think there could be interesting things to say in that. So I hope because they said it's not. And then they were like, I don't think it will be because they're filming it in Georgia instead of in Vancouver. So I think it will not be. But I wish it was.
Never say never.
And like I said, it could say things in the other CW shows that I don't think are being said, and it could make, you know, interesting character relationships. So two thumbs up. I've seen two episodes thus far, and I like it. It's so far.
I can't wait. I think it looks fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's good. It's very, very good.
Well, speaking of comic books, I did actually get a chance to watch and finish Punisher.
Mm-hmm. How was that?
I hardlined the snot out of that.
Nice. I need to watch that.
Let me just tell you, it has no business being as good as it is. And it's not good because it's a show about the Punisher. It's good because it's an exploration of post-traumatic stress disorder. And it is startlingly good in how it portrays its characters and how it makes you feel just simultaneously terrible and terrorized by these characters. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I've heard so much mixed stuff about it because there's a lot of people that say it's really good and there's other people that say it's like it's not the Punisher. And
but it is. It's the Punisher if the Punisher existed in our world. It's an accurate representation of what this person would become.
Well, and I think it needs to be said that, you know, the Punisher is not a good guy, people.
No, he's not. No. And he's never portrayed like that. And in this one, he knows he's not a good guy, but the good guy he used to be is still there in pieces. And that's half the fascination of watching it, is watching him struggle between the two sides of his persona while simultaneously realizing that even though he's still got all this rage, he is starting to heal. And you can see that there's a part of him that wants to put it all away.
Nice.
And that's a genuinely interesting struggle.
One of the few arcs of the Punisher I ever read, besides Welcome Back, Frank, was right after the original Civil War, when Punisher got brought into Captain America's side of the Civil War. and he walks into their base, and they had a few kind of villains working for him at that point, and he walks into their base and pulls out a gun and shoots three people and kills them. And like, everybody's like sitting there like, oh my God, like, what did you just do? And he's like, what? I'm the Punisher. What'd you expect? And then Captain America like kicked him out, you know, and it like really messed with him when Captain America like dressed him down to his face and kicked him out. And there was this whole arc in the Punisher comic for a while where he was like having like another bout of post-traumatic stress based off of Captain America yelling at him. And it was fascinating because it was like Captain America was the one character that the Punisher kind of respected out of everybody. And getting yelled at by him was like really messed with his head. And it was a good arc because of that.
Good stuff. Yeah. I think you haven't watched it yet.
No, I haven't.
You're going to love it. You are absolutely going to love it. And I can't wait to talk to you about it. So I'm not going to say anything else.
Cool.
I'm almost done with Penny Dreadful. I've been, you know, I kind of got derailed by the Punisher.
I still need to finish season three of that. I haven't watched, I watched season one and two, and we started watching three, but, you know, we talked a lot about how you just can't, you can't binge that show because you just get dirty.
No, you can't. It's tough, man. It's tough. It's one of the, it's, you know, like, I grew up in the time of slasher flicks and all that stuff. Like, nothing really gets under my skin anymore, but this show, man, it's like you're watching, you're like, oh, okay, all right. I'm going to go ahead and hit pause, and I'm going to come back to this in 1 or 2 weeks after my soul has been somewhat cleansed.
Yeah, yeah. They
don't, it's
they
rough, don't make, man.
They don't make water hot enough to get on the inside of you to
yeah,
wash
no,
out
not
the,
so
the
much.
Filth on your soul.
Not so much. I mean, but it's a phenomenal show. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. It's what the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen should have been.
So, yes, in between that, I also hardlined season two of Travelers because that was out on Netflix, and I... really, really, really like that show.
I have no comprehension of what that is.
Okay, so Travelers is a story about time travel. And instead of sending people back whole, what they do is...
I read about this. They quantum leap them kind of into people.
Kind of, yeah. So starting in the early 2000s, you start to get all this digital media so that you can actually accurately place and identify when people die, right?
Yeah.
Because they're on a webcam or something, right? Even if they're not directly utilizing it, an AI could surreptitiously turn it on so that it knows exactly when and where people are passing away. So with this information, they are transferring their consciousness 5 or 6 seconds before a person is set to pass away, as long as they're a suitable host, and basically assuming their life and then trying to influence the future. And it's been a fascinating show, and season one was really good. It's a little slower paced because they're building up all the characters, but I'm really glad they did it because in season two, we're past the building stage, and oh man, season two is just throttled way up.
Time travel is my favorite MacGuffin. I'll have to watch that too.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's really, really, really well done. Yeah, that's kind of been it for TV for me. I've got Blade Runner 2049 sitting next to me on disc, and I just haven't had time to watch it yet.
Yeah, I've wanted to watch that. I'm no fan of Blade Runner. Not that I think it's a bad movie. I'm not one of those people that it's like it's the best thing ever. I have watched every version of it, so I don't know if I does that qualify me as a fan. But yeah, I still want to watch that. I hear it's like some of the best fan fiction you'll ever watch.
Well, I don't know. I'll let you know. Well, what about I'm just gonna let you know right now. That's about it for me, other than some board games and some video games. How about you? Anything else outside of board games and video games?
A couple things. I've been playing Destiny a little bit, but I'm kind of finally starting to get burned out. I'm kind of looking for something new to play to, you know, at least wait till May, because I pre-bought the next expansion coming out in May. But I got off my duff finally and finally beat Dragon Quest Builders because I got to the last boss and then I think Destiny came out. I don't know what happened, but I got distracted. And I'm like, I should wrap that game up because I'm at the last boss. I should just, you know, spend the 30 minutes to go do that. So I finally spent the 30 minutes to go do that. That game continues to be good. And I found out they're going to release a sequel and I'm so excited for the sequel.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's going to have multiplayer like Minecraft. So at least two people, and they're adding in some new fun stuff. Like they were showing off some gameplay footage, and homeboy pulled out like a Link style, like a Super Mario World style, like, you know, glider thing where he holds it in his hands and his feet and kind of like glides with it like Mario does when he gets the feather.
Nice.
So good. I'm like, I'm so into that. I can't wait. But yeah, apparently it's going to be the same type of game, but they are going to have multiplayer in the story mode, which will be awesome, because that would be a lot of fun. Like, because then me and my kid could play it together, because she's getting better about reading. She's getting pretty decent, you know, but she can't read that fast. And, you know, so us playing it and me talking to people, and then she could say, what are they saying, Daddy? And I could say the lines and we can do stuff together. It'll be fun. I can't wait. So, yes, Dragon Quest Builders 2. Yes. Good.
Very nice.
And then I finally finished the Delta Green Handler's Guide completely. I got to the last page. I read everything in it. And still great. And then I was feeling it. I needed more. So I went, and they have a lot of PDF adventures that are part of the Kickstarter, and I went and downloaded all of them. And I started reading.
Wow.
Those. Yeah. Yeah. There's six, I think, now, or seven. Yeah. Yeah. They kind of run the gamut. Some of them are kind of hokey and cheesy, and it's like, horror adventure. A few of them are kind of messed up in various ways. And one of them was borderline really goodly awesome genius. I'd actually have to play it to see if it pans out, but the read was interesting. That one was called Observer Effect, and then again it deals with time travel, which is my favorite thing. And and then I read another one, and I don't know if this is a word or an anagram, because it's all in like capitalized, but it's VISCID, so VISCID. I don't know, but it's about, you know, genetic research run amok, which was also pretty good. I like that one too. Channeling the thing a little bit. So, but yeah, that's what I've been reading. So, and video gaming. And I have not done anything with board games. I have not played anything. I have been living a sad and lonely life.
Well then, let me fill you in on what it's like to have social life. that stung a little, huh?
I've been thinking about going and doing like Adventurers League or something. I just need to get out of the
house. You should, man. Totally.
I just don't know if I want to play I don't know what I want to do. I've been kind of poking around and seeing what's out there right now.
Well, I did have a chance to do a little bit of video gaming as well. Monster Hunter World came out.
My Destiny guild that I was complaining doesn't play Destiny anymore. They are all playing that. All of them.
Come join the dark side.
If I had the funds to buy a new release game at the moment, I would.
Well, keep it in mind, because I'm having a good time with it. I've barely had an opportunity to play it, but...
Do you have it on the Xbone or the PS4?
I got on the Xbox just because that's where all my friends are playing it, but if you end up on the PS4 and I've got some spare time, I'll gladly join you.
That's what you said about Destiny, and it didn't happen, sir, so...
Yeah, because I didn't have the spare time.
Well...
But no, it's really, really fun. It's got a little bit of a slow burn at first, but most JRPGs do. It's distinctly more role-playing game than anything else, but it's really, really pretty to look at, and the monsters are great, and I'm having fun. I'm just on the edge of it, though. I've just started playing it, so I'm still learning.
I'm really impressed with that game, because I was looking at stuff for it when it was coming out, because, you know, the Destiny Guild wouldn't shut up about it. And what I like about it is everything there, for the most part, vaguely looks like dinosaurs, but they're all dragons.
Yeah, kind of. That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, no, it's like dinosaurs as all of them descended from dragons, because they have this T-Rex looking thing that they show off a lot in the preview. And at some point, it gets really pissed, and these two fins come up on its back. And those are obviously like its wing remnants. Now, it can't fly with them, but it looks dragony wingy enough that I was like, oh, that's its, you know, air quotes, wings. And I think it breathed fire at one point too, so I was like, oh. And then that's when I noticed it the first time. I'm like, that's so a dragon. And then I started looking at all the other monsters. I'm like, those are all dragons too. They all have, if they don't have wings, they've got something on their back that at least was wings at some point and has now sort of evolved into something else. And I was like, oh, that's super duper clever. I love it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's just really fun, and the monsters are really interesting, and so far the questing system has been good. The one downside is there's been a lot of bugs with the matchmaking, so it's been a little bit of a lonely exercise so far, but I think that they are planning on releasing this first patch. It's not even been a week yet, and they're on top of it, so I'm not too worried yet. Oh, and I've been also continuing my quest through Zelda on the Switch, when I can pry the controller out of my wife's hands. Because as it turns out, she is completely addicted to Mario, to the point where in less than 2 weeks, she has beaten it.
Wow, Jessica?
Yeah.
What?
I'm not even kidding, man. I can't even come around the corner. She's always playing Mario.
Your wife, Jessica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You may remember her from such hits as Stop Playing That, I Want to Spend Time with You, and my personal favorite, What Do You Get Out of Those?
Your wife, Jessica, who watches The Fosters.
Yeah, she's still watching that, too.
Yeah, I know, a new season.
She took the night off from Mario last night so she could go watch the new episode.
Yeah.
The world silently wept.
What did that person do with your wife?
I don't know. I don't understand it.
Did you find like a large organic looking pod in your garage somewhere? Probably up in the rafters.
I'm just letting this
happen. And a pile of dust under it, because that's Jessica.
I'm just letting this happen. Sometimes you just gotta let it happen.
She's a pod person, man. You're gonna call her out on it. And she's just gonna go and scream at you.
You know what? I wouldn't put that beyond the realm of possibilities. It is definitely outside of the norm. But such is life. That's okay. Hey, man, she found her happiness. Go. Go for it. I encourage. And then...
I'm stunned. You can't see it. This is... I have shock-faced. This is the cosmic horror. This is still
an audio format.
Everything is wrong.
Okay.
That is so wrong that wrongness spreads out from it. It's
we're
so
going... to get through it together.
I need to go hug my family. The end upon us.
Say goodbye. Say goodbye. Well, in the meantime, though, I'm filling up my remaining days on Earth before the apocalypse happens, since my wife is playing Mario, with some board games, and I have chipped away slightly at the opportunity.
How slightly is slightly?
Well, I played Dead Men Tell No Tales from Minion Games. That was super fun. It's a game where you are using dice to simulate fire as you pillage on a pirate ship that your crew had previously opened up fire on. And you are trying to race through the ship, find treasures, and race out of the ship before it all explodes. And it was really fun. It was just a neat little game.
Hold up. I'm looking for the shelf of opportunity list.
Oh, it's on there, baby.
I don't know. I'm going to find it. Here we go.
And then I got the kids together one day, and we played a couple of card games, which were super, super fun. The first one is called Dead Man's Hand, Captain Carcass, also on the Shelf of Opportunity. And it's a fun little card game where it's all about push your luck. There's several suits in a deck. And you start drawing, and each suit that you draw has an effect. There's one that forces you to take two more cards, and there's one that gives you an opportunity to peek at the next card, and things like that. And you just are trying to keep going until you think that you're about to get a second card from the same suit. And at the end of the game, you look down at what you've managed to pull without losing, because if you do get two from the same suit, you lose everything. And you take the highest scoring one from every single suit and add them up, and whoever has the most points wins.
Nice.
And then we also played a game called Walk the Plank. Wow. And that is a game where everybody has three characters. They're played by little meeples on a pirate ship, and you've been told to walk the plank, and you have a variety of different actions on cards, and you get to choose three every round, and you play them in order, and you're basically trying to bully the other characters down the plank and into the gaping maw of the sea monster that's waiting for you, while you try and maneuver your meeples back to the boat. And so it's program movement, which means that after that first round, pretty much your plan is gone. Your plan is garbage, and you don't know what's going to happen. It's fun.
Nice. Well, okay, since I'm here editing this, is there anything to add to the list of go to our lovely Facebook group, Forgot My Dice Podcast Fans, and you can see this list yourself. Anything to add to the list? Rising Sun?
No, Rising Sun hasn't come yet. Everybody on Facebook is opening theirs, and I just sit here with tears in my eyes. But it's just a matter of time. They have like 31,000 backers, so my time will come.
What? Anything else? Have you gotten any new games?
No. I got another expansion for Mansions of Madness, but that's about the extent of my excitement.
Okay. I will call this update to the shelf of Jonathan's wall of opportunity list.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, go on.
I also had a chance to play Morocco, and I played it with Dale, and we had a great time. And in Morocco, you've got this the board, and the board basically simulates the marketplace in Morocco. and you have a variety of different workers, and you are basically placing workers every round, a couple every round, by spending these cubes. And the cubes are simulating information that you get by peeking through the roof of the market and getting the lay of the land. And that is simulated with a pawn that you move around that lets you choose one, any two of five different colored cubes. And you spend these cubes because on the edges of the stalls forming a grid are these exact same colored cubes. And you basically, to put a worker in a stall, you have to spend the cubes that intersect. So if there's a green on one axis and a black on another axis, you have to have a black and a green cube to be able to put a worker on that corner. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah, and then you just put your workers down. Whoever controls the stall when it's completely full and there's four spaces, you get to put down one of your tokens. There's a variety of different ways to score additional points. There's a couple different worker types. There is a bodyguard who takes up two slots, but you don't have access to him right away. You actually have to unlock him by coming in second place on another stall. There's also the tourist, and this worker, after you complete a stall, he wanders into one of the surrounding stalls and takes up a space there. So it's a kind of a two-for-one, and you get a couple of those that you can use during the game, but you're restricted into how many you get. And it's just it's really just genuinely fun, super easy to learn worker placement game with a fantastic production value. So I really, really enjoyed Morocco. And afterwards, Dale and I actually decided to go for an old friend, and we whipped out the Dresden Files card game again, and we did another couple rounds of that. And then I played another game off of the list called Rocky Road a la Mode. Okay. And this is an engine builder where you are in an ice cream truck, and there are cards that are available to you, and the cards have a lot of different iconography on them, and one of the icons tells you what it is. It can be one of several different types of ice cream. And what you need to do is you need to collect these cards and then cash them in, because you can also have the card turned sideways, which shows you some flavors that you need to satisfy to add the card to your truck. And by adding it to your truck, then you get a permanent boost on a specific type of ice cream and you get victory points. So think Splendor. You know how you're building that engine up? Yeah, you're doing it with ice cream. And you're doing this while cruising around a track in your ice cream truck shaped meeple, and it's just a mad scramble to be the first to get a certain amount of victory points. And there's a couple variants that come in the box, but what's really nice is this tiny, tiny little travel box. It's from Green Couch Games, and they have all their games come in these tiny boxes, and they're super portable and super quick to learn and super, super fun. And I'm really, really liking Rocky Road a la Mode. And so that's it. Yeah, that's what I've had a chance to play. I played some games with the kids, played some games with Dale. We'll see where it goes from there.
All right, so that means you have added one game to the list since we created it, and you have removed four.
What did I add?
It was something you forgot, Smurg.
Oh, yeah. No, that should have been on the list from the beginning.
All right, I'm updating the list, and there you go. And to see more of Jonathan's list, Facebook group. Bah! All right.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of Off the Shelf, Robert.
Uh-huh. I'm just, yeah. I agree.
We'll be back in just a moment after a short message when we will be talking The Wisdom of Crowds, which is, of course, our bi-weekly tabletop news segment. So, we'll return in just a moment. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fmdpodcast.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at forgotmydice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on Twitter. Find us at forgotmydice.
You can join us on Patreon, where we post outtakes and other bonus content.
And if you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give Forgot My Dice a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Store.
Lastly, for those of you who want control to sanction the podcast, pick up your shoe phone and call Agent 82. Chief, it's acceptable to get podcasts on our wristwatches. It won't be distracting.
I just don't even know what's happening right now.
Well, it's classified, Jonathan. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Oh, we've got to get these things upgraded from the 1960s. And welcome back. It is now time for The Wisdom of Crowds, our bi-weekly tabletop news segment. Well, let's start with the RPG news. This one has been on the tip of my tongue for quite some time. I remember when Fantasy Flight announced it during Gen Con. I'm super, super stoked. And I will say this before we announce it. It's apparently, from what the internet says, so take that with a grain of salt, it's going to be in tight supply, so make sure you definitely go to your FLGS and ask for one. It's the Star Wars RPG 30th Anniversary Edition. This is the old West End D6 version.
They've confirmed it. It's not just the core book. It's like the core book and then the source book with, like, you know, expanded stuff.
Take my money.
And it's going to come in
take it all.
What?
Take it all.
And it's going to come in a handsome slipcase where you can put both of them together on your shelf.
I'm so stoked. That just looks so awesome.
So as a Star Wars fan, Jonathan, you might be asking yourself, why do you care about this?
Well, Robert, why do I care about this?
Lucasfilm cut their teeth dealing with EU stuff with this RPG. Like, the whole concept of having an expanded universe and all that didn't exist prior to, you know, this RPG. And so them managing this RPG kind of gave them the experience to run an extended universe. And at the same time, they were doing the initial comics with Dark Horse Comics. But when Timothy Zahn got hired to write what became the Heir to the Empire trilogy, he asked, like, do you guys have a story Bible or anything that has anything to do with what's happening after Return of the Jedi? And Lucasfilm was like, no. And so what they did was they handed him a bunch of the role-playing stuff. That's why you should care. Like, it came out in the dark time. Like, Star Wars, I don't think, would still exist if it wasn't for this, because it was the only way to get Star Wars content. And thus, you know, the books, which really kind of made everything take off, you know, were heavily based off of this content. And
yeah, there was a good solid string of products that helped keep the brand alive. And I think we have the RPG systems and the video games to really thank for keeping the pulse going before the prequels.
And Timothy Zahn, by all accounts, really liked the role-playing game. He actually helped them write, like, a campaign box set called the Darkstrider campaign. And he was into it. So, you know, I mean, good stuff. And then also, it's notable because I think it used one of the first dice pool systems ever created. It was created for the Ghostbusters RPG, but they used the same system for this. So, I don't know. A lot of history. A lot of, like, you know, old classic game design to sink your teeth into.
Well, you get a classic RPG. You get more Star Wars, which is never a bad thing. And you get a really neat thing for FFG to release. And what a gift. That is a gift to gamers, truly. Well, All right. Speaking of RPGs, let's stay on the RPG train. And it looks like we have a new D&D developer joining the WotC family.
Kate Welch has joined the D&D team as a developer. It's interesting. So most of the time, like, game developers that work on role-playing games, when they sort of move on from role-playing games, they go to video games. And Kate is kind of taking the opposite track. She worked on Guild Wars 2. She worked on for several years. She's working for Amazon, which I'd never heard of this before I was reading the story. Amazon has a game studio. Did you know that?
I had no clue.
I had no clue either. They're working on a game called Crucible, which is a multiplayer game from what little I was able to find on the internet about it. But she was working with that team with, actually, TSR alum Jeff Grubb, which is, small world in Seattle gaming, right? Jeff Grubb is one of the classic first edition guys. But yeah, she was working on that, and then she, you know, a job came up at Wizard, she applied for it, and boom, she got it. And you might also recognize her for the Acquisitions Incorporated C-Team series. She plays Rosie B. Stinger, the grandma monk, which is hilarious if you think about it. And I hope she throws shoes. I haven't watched an episode, but I hope. I watched enough of an episode to see her catch an arrow and then decide not to throw it back just to, like, intimidate with it. But yeah, grandma monk is kind of hilarious. And they've done episodes at, like, PAX where they have to dress up. So they have to put her in an old lady wig, you know, and try to make her look grandmotherly. But, you know, she's, like, in her 20s or 30s, so she does not look grandmotherly. She looks like a young person wearing a gray wig. And to get after my own heart, she just posted on the Twitter the other day that she finished her Eowyn tattoo. And I'm like, ah, she's a fan of Eowyn. And so am I, because that's what I named my daughter. So, ah, she's on my team. So we're on Team Eowyn. By the time this comes out, she will have officially joined. I think I keep hearing things that she actually joins next week, which, you know, it's Thursday, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, by the time this comes out, I think that'll be day one for her. So, as always, we won't see anything from her for, like, months, because it takes, you know, months and months for anything to actually come out after you pitch it and start working on it. But there you go.
Moving right along, Speaking of WotC.
Yeah, yeah. So this was an interesting story that kind of came up. Wizards announced that they're requiring background checks for anybody who's running Wizards Play Network events. Most notably, this will affect Magic the Gathering, but I mean, it also technically it affects Adventures League because those are those. I don't know if the DMs for that would count or wouldn't. I have no idea, but definitely for the Magic, I think this is directly aimed at Magic judges. But we'll see if it has any sort of splash over with, you know, Adventures League GMs or whatever. But yeah, and it's basically because it got reported that there was a Magic judge who was on the sex offender registry and probably shouldn't have been, you know, hosting events with kids in them. So whoops. And then to step up, Gamma, the Game Manufacturers Association, is looking for somebody who will do background checks for their members at a discount. So, which is cool. Like this broke and like Gamma was like on top of it. They announced that they're looking into this immediately. So. It was kind of cool seeing them be that responsive to, you know, the people who run store or own stores that are members of Gamma. So
yeah, considering the interaction with kids, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, if you're a member of Gamma, I haven't heard if they found anybody yet. They were last I checked, which given was like a week ago now. They were, I think it seemed like they were zooming in on something, but nothing they could announce yet. So.
Well, and now popular deck builder Clank is getting a little more love this year.
Yeah, so I saw this. Clank, the Mummy's Curse expansion is coming.
Now, this is an expansion, not a new game, which is different than the first thing that got released, which was Clank in Space.
So this goes with Fantasy Clank, and it has a new game board, 40 dungeon cards, 2 Ankh tokens, a dragon marker, a mummy card, a pyramid dice, a mummy marker, 2 major secrets, 2 minor secrets, a supreme monkey idol, which I'm sounds in. Amazing, 1 market board, and 24 curse tokens, and a rule sheet. And from the description of the game in the press release I read, basically there's a mummy rolling around, and he is Bamf cursing everybody and putting bad stuff on you. So, sounds fun. I haven't played Clank. You have?
Yeah, you know, I played Clank and Clank in Space, and oddly enough... from a mechanical standpoint, I like Clank in Space better. There's some better decisions. It builds on Clank a little better. But for whatever reason, I think that the theme worked better in Clank. And so I ended up enjoying Clank just a little bit more. Not much, but just a smidge more. And
so
I'm excited
around
to see
and cursing you?
Yeah, I'm totally down. Like I think that could be a really fun fun addition.
So yeah, it should be out soon. This sounds like it will be a pre-Gen Con release. So yeah, soon, TM.
Well, are you ready for some news bites, Robert?
Yes.
All right.
And then we're going to cap off this section with something from the WTF file.
All right. Well, let's do some news bites, and we're going to start off with Rambo. Rambo the board game.
You say that Rambo the board game, and all I can think of is the board game better have a miniature that looks vaguely like Charlie Sheen, and then you better just pick up a handful of bullets and throw them at guys, and then they like die like they got hit by bullets. Because that was probably the best part of Hot Shots Part 2.
Well, I'm looking over at this press release that they put out, and the very, very first thing you see is John Rambo with his bow and arrow and with the explosive tip, and he's going to town.
Okay, stretch goals. There better be a... air quotes Weird Al figure that looks like Rambo and a Charlie Sheen figure that looks like Rambo, because that's just easy.
But okay, so there, I don't know about that, but are you ready for some of the Kickstarter exclusive bonuses?
Air quotes, come on.
No, but are you ready? Are you ready for the Kickstarter exclusive bonuses?
Is this a are you ready, like I'm going to be impressed, or are
oh
you
no, you're
like,
going to be impressed.
Me like
you're going to be impressed.
I'm going to be impressed?
We're going to start off with the least exciting one, leader markers. Okay, cool, whatever. Gameplay thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. A big knife token. And I mean, like, big. It's ginormous. And then, if you do the Kickstarter, you get an official red Rambo cloth headband. Take my money. Take it now.
Okay, third Kickstarter exclusive. They need to have something that looks vaguely like Gizmo from Gremlins with the red headband on. And the bow and arrow made out of whiteout, a pencil, and a clip, one of those clips that he's turned into a bow with a rubber band.
You know, I feel like if you get the Rambo board game and you get a copy of Arcadia Quest Pets, I feel like you could make that happen. I'm just saying, there is a smash up in there. It's there. I am feeling it.
Okay, that's cool.
Rambo the board game is coming from Everything Epic. You may remember them from some of my other desires, because they are the ones that are putting out the Big Trouble in Little China board game.
Nice.
Which I pre-ordered and should be delivered to my house, hopefully in the near future.
And you'll tell me when that comes, because I will add it to the shelf of opportunity.
Oh, you're not even going to need to add it, because the moment it comes, I'm playing it that night. Uh-huh. That's not going to happen.
Remember, it only works if you add to it as you get stuff, too.
Oh, no. No, I'm gonna knock this one off the list immediately. All right, so moving on to the next news bite. Gale Force 9 has already announced a couple of new expansions for the new Firefly Adventures game. Wanted Fugitives and Respectable Folk.
And this is different from the Firefly board game.
Which one?
The one that you need like a 6x9 table to play all the expansions.
Ah, that board game. Yes. Yes, it is different than the Firefly board game. Firefly Adventures is a... Instead of a pick-up-and-deliver game, this is more of like a traditional game along the lines of like a Star Wars Imperial Assault or something like that.
Oh, okay, cool.
And each of these expansions comes with 4 crew miniatures, a casual and a heroic pose for each character, 2 double-sided crew cards, 10 equipment cards, and 2 new jobs. So, if you are a fan of Firefly and are planning on getting this new Firefly Adventures board game, you've got some stuff to look forward to in the future. Next news bite up on my list is that they are adding organized play to Ashes. So if you remember a couple years ago, Ashes was released by Plaid Hat Games.
Yeah.
It's got beautiful art. It's got a really nifty dice mechanic. It's like Magic the Gathering with a dice mechanic mixed in. It's super, super fun. And they are getting an organized play event going. There's going to be a kit release to FLGS. Looks like they've got some more expansions planned for the near future, and there's a lot going on with that game. Ashes is really starting to shape up into something interesting.
Last but not least, last episode, we talked about Into the Borderlands by Goodman Games for 5th edition D&D. They have now put that up for pre-order. It should be out in May of this year, and it is now clocking in at 368 pages because they released the index, and it is massive.
Well, are you ready for the last bit of news? Really the most important one, the only one we really should have talked about.
Is this the WTF file?
No,
that's the one we really should have talked about. But anyway, okay, that's going to be a high bar because the WTF file one's funny as heck. So you, go, impress me.
Star Wars Legion has a release date.
It always had a release date.
No, it never had a date. It had a window. Got a date. Yes, it is, according to this press release that I have found on their website, March 22nd, we get the core set, the dice pack, the movement tools, and range ruler pack. Stormtroopers unit expansion, Rebel Troopers unit expansion, the AT-RT, the 74-Z speeder bikes, the AT-ST, and the T-47 airspeeder. So, you get stuff for the Rebels, you get stuff for the Empire, and you definitely
get a little... Have you seen the model kit for the AT-ST?
The one that's standing right next to the one from Imperial Assault and dwarfs it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yes, I have.
I gotta say, I'm impressed, because they made that thing... true scale to the miniatures, so it's big.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's real, real big. And actually, I was looking at it, the snowspeeder from Hoth is about the right size too. So.
Yeah, no, and they look beautiful. The models look beautiful. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is a good time to be a gamer, Robert.
It is.
Well, before we jump into our next break, what is the WTF file?
All right, so I follow Delta Green co-creator Dennis Dittweiler on Twitter. And yesterday, he tweeted out this little gem. Or was it the day before? The other day, he tweeted out this little gem. Well, I can check that off my bucket list. Sent a New Age yoga company a DMCA cease and desist to remove stolen intellectual property based directly on a government conspiracy that hunts Cthulhu. So yes, I couldn't find the post because the DMCA actually had hit by the time I got wind of this. So I don't know what they stole. But basically, somebody, this New Age yoga place, had stolen the intellectual property of the Nazi group from World War II called the Krotekia that was trying to summon Azathoth into the world and use it as a nuclear bomb. And quoted like several of the characters they made up that were in the Krotekia directly as people who were doing something in this strange castle that opened up a rift in time and space. Apparently, it was a straight lift, which means they copied text out of Delta Green lore. To do it, which is how he was able to file the DMCA and get it like instantly nuked off the internet.
Wow. That is a weird one. That is definitely a weird one.
Yeah, and apparently it's not the first time this happened. You know, there's Delta Green has basically found its way onto History Channel stuff from what he said and some other things. So as a lesson to everybody out there, people, I guess you really shouldn't believe everything you read on the internet or see on the TV for that matter, because a role-playing game about a, you know, group that hunts Cthulhus and you know, gray aliens and whatnot has managed to make it into stuff where people are quoting it as truth, and that is very, very much not true at all. But yeah, I thought that was hysterical that somebody just copied Delta Green lore and was trying to pass it off as a real thing.
I think that's a real statement about the quality of the writing.
Yeah, no, in the original Delta Green book, they have a very lengthy section about how to make things appear to be top secret documents. And I could buy that somebody would mistake it because they have some things that look like top secret documents in the back of the old books. It's pretty cool. Yeah, and by the way, the Delta Green Facebook page and the Twitter page, because they pretty much post the same thing. If you're looking for, you know, real life stories that could inspire, you know, creepy conspiracy real world adventures, they do that stuff all the time. They'll just post weird things that come across from, like, you know, actual news, and then kind of have a, this is the sort of Delta Greenified version of it, you know, and it's yeah, they post some good stuff. So I always highly recommend that, those two things. And they're the same thing. If you use Twitter, follow Delta Green on Twitter. If you use Facebook, follow Delta Green on Facebook. You will not be disappointed with the strange news that they post every so often, about once or twice a week.
That is our WTF file for the episode. And now, it's been a year. It's time for our Year in the Life segment, where we look at what we deep dove a year ago, and we have 365 seconds to talk about it again. And if we keep blabbering on, well, frankly, that means we need to get that sucker off the shelf. So, 1 year ago.
Forgot My Dice, episode 11. The internet is for hate and cons are for love.
Oh, that is such a great quote, too.
Yeah.
Mr. Rob Weiland.
Yeah, Mr. Rob Weiland. Rob Weiland. Or Robo... Wait, what is it? Robo-Bowie Land.
I like it. I like it.
Robot Bowie. Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you are a follower of his on Twitter or Facebook, he writes and posts some pretty funny stuff.
So, yeah, we had him on for the entire episode. We talked about the RPG he wrote, Kaiju Incorporated, for Fate Core. I know you and I both have not played the RPG since then. It was a good read. We had a fun time doing it. We haven't had Rob on as a guest either.
No, we need to have Rob again. Let's reach out.
Incidentally, the thing I can definitely say, episode 11 was probably our highest listened to episode that we've ever had, because the hits on our own website were off the charts for that one. Like, people, a lot of people looked at the show notes for that one. A lot. Much, much higher than normal. So for our F&D Classic episode, which should come out in about a week, go ahead and give that one a listen. It was a good episode, and we had a fun time chatting with them. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a perfect game for us to offer to run for our patrons if we get enough patrons.
Yeah, I set that up on the Patreon.
There you go.
And we're on the hook. If we make $20, you have to stream yourself in that goofy hat playing the flying game.
DCS,
because you said you would.
I would. I will. I have no problem with that.
And to be clear, we're not going to have footage of him playing what's going on in the game. It will just be your face with the goofy hat.
As I move left and right and analyze the horizon for enemies.
And cuss occasionally, I'm sure.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, it's me. Who am I kidding, right? Well, that wraps up a year in the life. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. We really do need to get that game out because neither of us haven't had an opportunity to play it. It's tough with RPGs because there's so much prep that goes into it.
Well, it's not just prep. You got to, like, you know, you have to have your group and you have to decide, is this going to be a one shot? Is this going to be a longer thing?
Yeah.
And
I enjoyed that book tremendously.
I did too. I enjoy Fate Core. I haven't played it enough.
There you go. Sounds like we both need to get our copies of Kaiju Incorporated out and get to playing. Well, we'll be back after a short break, and when we return, it'll be time for us to do a little bit of deep diving, and this time, yet another plane shift, this time into Ixalan.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview.
And welcome back. It is time, of course, for our deep dive. And in this week's deep dive, we are going to be taking another plane shift, this time into the world of Ixalan.
So, history lesson, if you're new to the podcast, Wizards of the Coast owned D&D for, 20 years? Before they decided to merge D&D with Magic the Gathering, and they have been releasing products that do just that. They are supposed to be companions for the art books that they release, so you can use the art books as a campaign setting. But, that's what we're reviewing. It's Plane Shift Ixalan, so let me read the blurb on the cover. Deep in the heart of Ixalan's verdant jungle lies a treasure beyond imagining. Join peoples of this plane in their search for an ancient golden city. Here you can sail with daring pirates, call on the might of earth-shaking dinosaurs, protect Ixalan's secrets with mysterious merfolk, and combat the ambitions of invading vampires. A whole world waits to be discovered. Come and join the struggle to claim the greatest treasure of Ixalan, the legendary Immortal Sun.
I have to say, this is one of the plane shifts that really has attracted me the most just because of the weird mix that it's got going on there. You got your pirates.
Mm-hmm.
What goes well with pirates, Robert?
Rum.
Rum and perhaps a little side order of Aztecs with dinosaurs.
I was going to go with Johnny Depp.
And if you have Aztecs and dinosaurs, you know what you need then?
What?
Some conquistador vampires.
Nice, nice.
And if you got conquistador vampires, really, what's your side dish there? How about some merfolk? or maybe a city of gold? Or maybe a mega treasure, the Immortal Sun? Or maybe we got the combo platter, because you get all those things.
Yeah, if you listened to the last episode, I was trying to express what was it was about the setting that I didn't like, and I finally put my finger on it in the 2.5 weeks since then. It's that... It's almost got too much. Like, all of those things, especially the pirates, the Aztecs, the conquistador vampires, and the merfolk, they're kind of awesome on their own, but the problem was none of them got a chance to shine because they're surrounded by three other awesome things that don't also get enough time to develop. And, yeah, that's the kind of... Yeah, that's the thing I couldn't think of earlier. But, yeah, this setting really does have it all, though. And even with the art book, like there's so much more that you could do with this that would be fascinating. And it actually does make kind of a good D&D world because of that, because there's so many factions and moving parts and all of that. So, but yeah, lore-wise, the pirates are basically the free people that were left from the pseudo-Europe after the vampires invaded and took over everything. The Aztecs are the native people of Ixalan, and they have dinosaurs, and They built the city of gold, but they lost it a long time ago, and they don't know where it is. And they know that the Immortal Sun, this uber treasure, is there, and they're trying to get it back. And the pirates are trying to get the uber treasure because, you know, it's a treasure. They need to bury it somewhere, right? The conquistador vampires are also looking for it because way, way back, the church that they all belong to, that was the place where the Immortal Sun was being held for a time, and then it got taken away, so now they're trying to get it back. So they're in Ixalan trying to get it. And the merfolk are the only group that are trying to keep everybody the heck away, because they're currently in charge of keeping it safe, and the way they kept it safe was nobody remembers where the city was. Like, if you knew where the city was when they hit it again, you were just not allowed to tell on everybody. So the merfolk have this weird job where they're supposed to keep everybody away from a city that they don't entirely know the location of.
You had me a hello.
So they're definitely...
There's a lot going on. I mean, yeah, this is a very complicated world.
Yeah, there is a lot going on. And not only that, then you have this sort of the ongoing plot line of the setting, which is... go back and listen to other episodes, because I'm not going to explain this whole story again. But the evil dragon Nicol Bolas is trying to get back to Dominaria. And apparently the Immortal Sun is part of his plans. And so he has sent... his agent Vraska, who's a Gorgon, who becomes a pirate. So, yes, you have a snake-headed Medusa-y Gorgon pirate in this setting, too. Because why not? Why not, Jonathan? And so she's after it. And then in the last setting, Amonkhet, Jace went toe-to-toe with Nicol Bolas and almost died and got his brain wiped. And so he plane shifted away, and he accidentally plane shifted to Ixalan. So he's also running around as this amnesiac castaway. I guess spoiler alert, but it's a card in the new Magic set. Nicol Bolas wins again. Vraska gets the Immortal Sun and takes it off the plane. And so now he's presumably got everything he needs to get back to Dominaria, which will be the next setting. In the next plane shift will be plane shift Dominaria, because that's the next Magic set after this. So, but yeah, the storyline has a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of key players who are all doing stuff and alliances, and like just everything that's going on in this setting is really complicated, because there's a lot of like strange bedfellows. If you read the art book, there's a lot of people from different factions kind of getting together and deciding to team up to go find the City of Gold. And no less, they just had a poll where they haven't actually determined who actually got the City of Gold, even though the Immortal Sun is no longer there. So they had people vote on it on the internet. And so if they ever go back to Ixalan, one of the four factions will be in control of Ixalan when they go back, or not Ixalan, in control of the City of Gold when they go back. And so they will have, you know, I mean, they may not have this cool Uber treasure, but they'll have a giant city with all the gold ever in it. So that'll make them at least wealthy, I guess. So,
yeah, the plane shift, I mean, to be fair, that's not really what the plane shift's about, right? Because it's really just trying to give you an overview to get you playing in the setting.
Yeah, it's kind of like the player's packet. Like, they're sort of assuming if you're going to GM it, you've probably done your research. And if you don't own the art book, you are versed enough in Magic lore that you don't need it, you know? But it's there to give the rules for people who don't have that, I guess. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Well, let's kind of go over the book then, shall we? It's 47 pages long. A lot of it is art, and it's absolutely gorgeous art.
You know, it's magic art. Magic art's always good.
Yeah, I mean, like, you wouldn't expect anything less. I mean, you'd be disappointed if it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it starts off with just an overview of the world of Ixalan, and it displays it in an interesting way. Just like the other Plane Shifts book, it covers the world while giving you suggestions for the classes and the races that would be most appropriate for any given given section. For instance, it starts off telling you about the Sun Empire, which of course is primarily human, and it says, hey, be a human, here's some suggested backgrounds, and then it goes through the classes and tells you why they would be a good choice for somebody from the Empire, and it's all contextual, meaning that it's giving it to you as it would be impacted by the story, which I think is great.
And then, interestingly, in this one, if you're from any of the tribes, as they're called in the magic, they give you, instead of having your normal background ideals and bonds, they give you an option of basically rolling on another table with specific ones to that faction. So instead of your ideal, you know, being if you pick the acolyte background, instead of picking that, you could pick the Sun Empire ideals and, you know, have something a little bit more tied into the tribe that your character has been created into and joined. And also look at that art on top of the suggested ideals and suggested bonds. It's called a devourer of the mighty by Eric Dechamps, and it's brachiosaurs with feathers on their head, because of course they do.
That's a beautiful picture, almost as beautiful as the next one, which is the river heralds.
So how does this make you feel, because you have a weird affinity to the merfolk?
I do, oddly.
So how do these merfolk make you feel?
I like them. They're colorful. I like the extra kind of like fins, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's kind of appropriate with the Caribbean setting. I really like their background, too. I like that they're nomadic and that the Sun Empire has kind of displaced them. Creates a little bit of tension, which is always a good thing in a D&D game. And I like their ideals, too. They're shamanistic. They live with the land, etc. That's fun. It's neat. And I they look beautiful. I'm totally down. Yeah, I would actually, looking through the entirety of the book and what's presented, that is the direction I would go.
Yeah, they're kind of they're the other native people to Ixalan. And they're like, you know, kind of the nomadic tribesmen kind of riff. But, you know, they're merfolk, so they don't like... They follow the rivers, but they follow the rivers because they're freaking in them, which is kind of funny. But the merfolk are interesting. Well, we'll get to it when we actually get to the races. Next up, they talk about my personal favorite, the Legion of Dusk, which are the aforementioned conquistador vampires.
Yeah, they're cool. They've got such great armor on, too.
Yeah. Well, it's very conquistador armor. And it's funny that they don't get into it as much in this, but the reason that the vampires are sort of mixed in with the sort of pseudo-Catholicism, you know, because conquistadors and all that, it's very interesting, and it ties a lot into the Immortal Sun storyline. And by far, these guys were my favorite. Like, if I ever run a homebrew setting, I may have to lift these guys out and, like, swipe them and put them into my setting, because they're just awesome. Their whole storyline of, you know, they lost the Immortal Sun, and, you know, basically Rome... or Spain or whatever, for a few hundred years kind of fell into fighting where all the other neighboring countries tried to invade them because, you know, they had the Vatican there, basically, and they were wealthy because of it. And then right at the tip of that battle, right when everything was going to hell, the original lady who guarded the immortal sun shows back up, and she's like an uber vampire, like, you know, like bat punchy, you know, Dracula Untold style vampire at this point. And it's been a few hundred years, and she basically made herself into a vampire to continue looking for the immortal sun, because it apparently granted immortality before it got taken away. But since she was no longer immortal, she had to figure out a new way to do it. So, you know, vampireness. And the mix of vampirism with, you know, with a moral church is really weird, because they are kind of good guys, because they don't feed on, they only feed on like criminals and their enemies and heretics and stuff. And it's kind of interesting trying to see people make vampirism a good thing and fight, you know, the bad parts of the curse and all that. And the whole storyline of how the nobility and the church was slowly taken over by vampires in this country, and then how those vampires later took on and conquered all of, you know, Ixalan Europe. It was a good read. I really like the Legion of Dusk. That was my favorite part. And you know, you can be a vampire, you can be human, because, you know, the nobility and the high ups are vampires, but, you know, the little guys are humans in that setting. And they don't have much to fear about their vampire overlords, because, again, unless you're a criminal and have broken their laws, they can't feed on you. That's super duper illegal.
And we all know how good vampires are at following rules.
Well, yeah, they get into that. Some of them don't. But they should. If they're going to be good Legion of Dusk members, they should follow the rules and not eat their vassals. But yeah, occasionally people, it happens. And then last,
all right, then, well, let's talk a little bit about our pirates.
The Brazen Coalition.
Yeah, yeah, I like that name. That's a good name.
Yeah, yeah. So they are the remnants of the other countries in Ixalan Europe that, as the vampires were conquering Europe, you know, they got pushed further and further and further off of their homelands, and eventually they got pushed out into the sea, and they formed pirating bands out there. And some of them came to Ixalan, and see, I wish they'd gone into this. They have a fun story where two of the pirate captains a long time ago, but because the both of them are still alive, but they're much older now. They got in this battle, and their ships collided, and they couldn't separate the ships, but they didn't sink. And so they use that as the basis of a floating island that they've built onto over time, as they bring in old ships that really aren't seaworthy anymore. They just sort of strap it onto this growing island of, you know, dead boats. And that's where the pirates' base is. It's just floating off the shore of Ixalan somewhere. And it's awesome. Like, you know, it reminds me of like Hook, you know, where Captain Hook's city, where it had all those, you know, it was just a bunch of piratey stuff just sort of off the shore. It like the visuals of it and all that stuff is really cool. Like just this pirate city of broken ships sitting out off the coast somewhere. It's good stuff. And the pirates are funny as heck, like, cause they do not get along. And that's the thing again, why I wish it was just pirates, because like they talk about all these different captains and all these different fleets in the art book. And I wish they had more time to go into them, because they're all cool. They all have different ways of handling stuff. And they kind of vaguely mention that most pirate captains are wizards, because, you know, if you're going to be a pirate captain and the wind goes out, well, it pays to be a wizard and just conjuring wind, you know? Again, oh, and this is the other interesting part. They're also the most multiracial group in the setting, because you can be human, of course, but you could also be orc, siren, and goblin. And sirens are new in the setting, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, they're pretty cool. Think harpies.
Yeah, so... the next chapter is the races of Ixalan, and you got the humans, which are just your generic humans from the player's handbook.
They're the most basic. They get the least coverage, but we know humans well at this point in D&D.
Yeah, yeah. And then they have the merfolk, and the merfolk are built exactly like the merfolk from every other setting that merfolk have been in. So. Pardon me.
And I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, well, it's because they're all supposed to be one race. And then they have new sub-races, which have unique abilities. So they have the green merfolk and the blue merfolk, which are native to Ixalan. But if your green merfolk went to Zendikar, you know, you would have a lot of stuff in common with those merfolk, because you are essentially the same race. It's just, you know, you're more colorful because you were, you know, you're from Ixalan, where the merfolk on Zendikar looks slightly different, but you're still the same people. So,
and we probably should have mentioned earlier that each of these sections, and this is the merfolk section, the first one that we really, really see this, it's detailing out kind of the statistical changes that would happen because of your racial decision.
And if you're familiar with D&D, like elves, like you can be an elf, but then you also have to decide to be a wood elf or a high elf or a drow. In this, you're a merfolk, but you have to decide if you're going to be a blue merfolk and a green merfolk. And they have slightly different abilities just based off of that decision. So next up after them, we have vampires, which we've seen. It's the same. It's a very similar vampire to what we've seen from Zendikar, but they've got slightly different features, and they get into that a little bit later too. But yeah, these guys are basically a subrace of the vampires, and they tell you how to break them off, and you know, so you could have Zendikar vampires and then Ixalan vampires, and they're both vampires, but they're slightly different because they're just slightly different because of the plane they're from. The only thing I will say is it kind of breaks the lore, because in the lore they describe them as like having like crazy powers, and these do not have crazy powers. These are, you know, they're on par with a D&D race, and they give them a racial feat, which is fun, which allows you to replace the bottom half of your body with black vapor, and you can kind of fly around, which is fun. It's a little bit of a disconnect between the lore and the game, but you know, for game purposes, it's probably better to have the vampires toned down so players, you know, could actually be them. But then again, if you don't want your players to actually be vampires, then you could amp them up a bit and have them be, you know, more threatening bad guys. And then we have orcs, which are pretty much orcs from the player's handbook, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, they're pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Goblins, which are very similar to goblins we've seen in Planeshift Zendikar. They have slightly different stuff. Looks-wise, they look a little bit more like baboons, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'll agree with you there.
But, you know, they're goblins. They like tinkering. They like blowing stuff up. They're fun. And they're on the pirate side, so the picture of them is shooting magic cannons, which is awesome. Sirens are, yeah, they're bird people. They have, you know, bird wings and feathers for hair, and they can sing songs that, you know, make people friendly towards you, which is kind of fun. Then the chapter is followed up with how to turn these races into sub-races. So if you're running a planar campaign, you know, you can say, like, these are Zendikar vampires, and these are Ixalan vampires. And then that's it. Then they move into the land of the Great River, which is the...
Some beautiful maps, which is really nice. It really gives you a good idea of how Ixalan is laid out, which is neat.
A lot of people are really, like, confused about, well, why did they finally do a map for this? And it's like, it's a setting about pirates bearing treasure. How do you not have a map, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, maps are inherent to pirates.
But yeah, you actually...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, you actually do get a map of Ixalan, which is fun. You know, like, it's cool. And if you notice, the pirate tent I was talking about, High and Dry, that's up in the upper right-hand corner of the map.
Well, and then they start talking about the world in general. And one of the first topics is, of course, ancient sites, which, when we talk about the New World from real pirates, you really do get into all the ancient cities and all the treasures that were there. And so, in a very appropriate manner, there is, in fact, a detailed treasure guide about some of the things that you might find in these ancient sites.
Yeah, my favorite bit was they talk about the Ixalan-based adventure that they made, X Marks the Spot, and they say if you have... it was actually inspired by an adventure that's in Tales from the Yawning Portal, and so they're saying, like, if you're running X Marks the Spot and you want to go on a little bit longer, you can run that adventure when they get to that temple, because they kind of skip over anything that happens in the temple, but it's like, hey, just insert this adventure here if you're running it. This is actually what it was based on, so... You know, I thought that was a cool little aside that tied in, you know, it was product placement, but it was well done.
Well, and then beyond that, we get a lot of the standard stuff that we've come to expect from these plane shift guides, right? We get what life is like on the water, what life is like in the forest. You get a lot of discussion about nature, a lot of discussion around something that is native to the land called the Night Terrors. They're enemies of the sun, essentially. And then... And this is where it really gets important. This is the largest single section of this book. It's the dinosaur section.
Yeah, yeah. And especially...
It's page after page after page of beautiful, frilled, feathered, colored dinosaurs. And all of the information and stats that you need to have them in your game.
And some of them, they just say, use the stats of, like, you know... A giant crocodile. They say giant crocodiles and Spinosaurus is basically all... Sailbacks is what they call them, but they're Spinosauruses. If you watch Jurassic Park 3.
What? I need you to look at... I don't know what page the number this is. It's not page numbers. I need you to look at the page with the dinosaur tyrants.
Yeah, yeah, I'm there.
That dino's wearing armor.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a feathered T-Rex with armor.
Yeah, the Sun Empire. They armor up dinosaurs and ride them, sir. That's a thing that happens in this setting.
And let's not forget your favorite, the one that you texted me out of the blue one day with, the three-headed T-Rex.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple pages later, they have the elder dinosaur. And
T-Rexburus?
Well, the elder dinosaurs are uber dinosaurs that were found in the Golden City. And then they give you the base stats for them. And then they give you sort of like a template, you know, kind of like a half dragon for the different ones. Because they all have the same sort of basic stats, but then they're... Other stats are slightly different. And the one we're talking about, the picture of him is on the Elder Dinosaur page on the bottom right. His name is, or its name, her name, I have no idea, is Zakama, the Primal Calamity. And it's a three-headed T-Rex. And, yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, that in particular is a glorious painting, too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I forgot they have stats for chupacabras. That made me happy. The part that I thought was most interesting is at the back of the book, they get into this section called, it's the appendix, it's called The Colors of Magic, and they talk about how to integrate some of the core concepts of magic colors, you know, like red and red mana, white mana, etc., into D&D. And the way they did it, I thought was interesting. They do it as like backgrounds. So, you know, instead of getting the personality traits and, again, the ideals of your normal background, you could pick a personality trait or an ideal from what mana color you feel your character is aligned to, which I thought was an interesting way of handling it, because a lot of people get really hung up on the idea of, like, making a new wizard class or making a new spell list and, like, dividing up all the spells. And they've always been like, don't worry about it. And this one, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, don't worry about it. That's fluff. And backgrounds in 5th edition have always been really, really good for fluffy stuff. So assigning fluff stuff to your background based off of what mana color you think your character is, I thought was a very clever solution to how to give it a little bit more crunchy rules but not have it really mean all that much, which, I don't know, I thought this part was actually particularly inspired, especially if you're running a magic-based D&D campaign. Because, yeah, don't get caught up, like, thinking, like, oh, you know, what spells would white mana be? And it's like, I don't know if my character could cast this spell because I think it would be black. It's like, just don't worry about it. Just take some traits and just fluff it right in your head. I mean, come on, they have white mana aligned vampires in this setting. It's obviously not hard and fast. One of the questions we always ask, is there anything off in the execution? And again, I already said it, you know, it's just they didn't give them enough time. Like, who did the pirates sell their booty to? You know, because they're not doing it just for burying it. You know, they're doing it to make money. And they didn't really answer that question. And again, it's just everything could use more space to roll with. You know what I mean? That was the only thing I found. But that's not the plane shift's fault. What do you think of the setting as a D&D setting, though, Jonathan?
I think it's a great setting. I mean, there's just so many different directions that you can take it in. And they've done such a good job of outlining how the system will work with this particular setting. You know, all of these plane shift books have been the same in terms of how ready they are to accept D&D players into them. And I think that this is, you know, just another jewel in that crown. I think this is a fantastic thing. And the fact that they give it away for free is just amazing.
And again, you know, there's plenty of cool stuff to poach for your own homebrew game. Cause you know, if you think vampires is actually a player character race or a good idea, like there's rules already made up for you, and merfolk and flying siren people and stuff. Like there's always good stuff to poach in any of these things.
And you know, just like the last couple, I'll give the same warning. This is an incomplete document by design. This is the free taste. This is the let's get you started. But really, if you want to really get into this world, then the perfect place is the art book. That's where you're going to get your full story, your full background, and everything that you need.
Well, in this settings case, not quite enough. A good taste, and you want more. So that's the thing. I wanted more out of every faction, and I just didn't get it, and that's what was disappointing. I wanted more.
Yeah, but see, you can't hold that against it. That's not the nature of this book.
Well, but the art book, that is the nature of the art book. That's what's there to do, is to give me everything I need. But
I didn't realize you meant the art book.
I meant the art book. But yeah. That's what I wanted out of the art book. I wanted more of everything, and it just didn't have the space, because there were so many tribes, and they were so different. You know, you couldn't, like... The pirates don't have much to do. I mean, historically they do, but their culture is very separated from all the other cultures. So, yeah, it's just I wanted more of everything. It left me wanting more. That's why I was disappointed with the book. Like all the other books, it was glorious. It gave me everything I wanted and more. And this one, I was just like, oh, I just want more.
See, to me, that's
they just
a
need to go
great
back to the
thing
plane,
because
we'll get another
where the book ends is where you can start with your exploration. And I think that leaves a lot to
that's
the,
true.
You know, to basically us for us to kind of absorb. And yeah. I think that's cool. That's a good place to start a story.
That's true. You could fill this a lot of this in with your own headcanon, especially if you know a lot about pirates or Aztecs or whatever faction, you know, you're going to really expand on. It gives you a good base, but then you can definitely build off of it your own way. So that's a good point.
Based on your experience as a DM, based on your experience as a player, based on your experience with previous products in this line, do you think this is going to be fun to play?
Yeah. I mean, it's already got something going for it. They have a free adventure for it that you'd have to play over like two, three, four sessions instead of just one. So that's awesome. Like, I, as a free product, especially if you already own Tales from the Yawning Portal, which has the bonus stuff in it, you could run a pretty good one, not one shot, like a short campaign of this and get a good taste of it, which is much better than any of the others, because in all of the others, they don't really have adventures tied into it. I mean, I guess Innistrad had Curse of Strahd that you could run, but that was like a super adventure. That's not just a couple of days. So it's yeah, I like this one a lot.
That is Plane Shift Ixalan. It is, of course, going to be linked in our show notes and on the website, so go there and take a look. You really can't do badly with this. I mean, at the very least, you're going to get this huge PDF with a lot of cool story stuff and some awesome, awesome art. I mean, it's free. What more do you want?
Yeah, and again, you could poach it for your own homebrew. Magic's very good at inspiring cool ideas because the art's cool and they have a lot of cool ideas that they've really done.
And there are a lot of cool ideas in this.
Yes, totally, totally.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I don't even know what we're deep diving next time, Robert. Do you?
No.
All right. Well, now it looks like we've got some homework to do. Hopefully, if everything goes right, Rising Sun will come, and then I'll have lots and lots and lots to pour over, and then we can talk.
There you go. That sound. You can try to sell me on that game.
I'm living in hope right now.
Well, I can't wait. I'm very sad I won't be able to look at those miniatures. I'm going to have a lot of miniatures to look at come September.
I am going to be sending you lots and lots of pictures.
I'm so jelly of the Godzilla. Oh, that Godzilla mini.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Join us again in 2 weeks for episode 35. And until then, Robert, any final thoughts?
Yeah, sorry, people. Contest is over. Ba-ba-ba-bum. Stay tuned for the winner.
Party on, Robert.
Party on, Jonathan.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elefiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.